This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman. Welcome to my podcast. I've been a dental-specific CPA. Coming up Labor Day, day after Labor Day, will be 40 years, and I am a very proud director in the dental division of our CPA firm in Tustin, California, of Ide Bailey. Ide Bailey works with about 1,000 dentists, mostly in the Western United States, and if you are looking for a dental CPA, you're not getting the services you're looking for, this is going to be coming out right around tax time, folks, right around April, May. And if you got a big surprise or you didn't get a lot of attention from your accountant or you need some help in any financial aspect of dentistry, we got you covered. Give me a call at 657-279-3243 or email me at awiederman, W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at idebailey.com. Today is Estate Planning Day on the Art of Dental Finance and Management. We have not done a podcast in several years. We're past our five-year anniversary on the podcast, but it is something that is very, very important in financial planning. It's one of the seven aspects of financial planning we speak about, and it is something that is, let's think about it here, folks. Let's see, I want to plan a cruise around the Caribbean, or I'm going to call my estate planning attorney and start planning on my estate documents. What should I do? I'll plan the vacation. So people put it off. It's not important. It's no big deal. I'll be gone. Well, my guest today is a very, very prominent estate planning attorney, Josh Meyer. Josh works out of Newport Beach, California. We do a lot of work with Josh, and we're going to talk about why it's important to have estate documents. In fact, according to a survey from the website Herring.com, which is a senior living referral service, I didn't think it was this high. 67%, two out of every three Americans, do not have appropriate estate documents. So we're going to talk to Josh about that. Revocable living trust, durable powers of attorney. This is really important stuff. It's not fun. It's not being on the golf course or on a fly fishing stream, which you guys all know are my two happy places. But it is something that, in my opinion, I have beaten clients over the head for 40 years. And I don't give this kind of advice. My advice is you call someone like Josh Meyer and you get this done. So we'll get to Josh in a moment. I want to share a couple of things. As I mentioned, we are come up around tax time. We'd love to hear from you. Again, 657-279-3243 if you want to call me directly, or awiederman@idebailey.com if you have any kind of questions on taxes, anything dental we can handle. Also, I want to give a kudos to my partner, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com. They are the main number one clinical magazine in the country for clinical articles. I have produced three live videos. I did them live, and you can buy them for a very reasonable cost also on talking about Art's Golden Rules of Financial Planning, and also talking about retirement planning and metrics. So if you want to do that, go to www.decisionsindentistry.com. I want to touch on one thing, which I've touched on the last couple of recordings. The government passed a law, and it's called the Corporate Transparency Act. And we're not going to spend a lot of time on it other than to tell you that it is a form that is taken care of by the same people that take care of what's called the FinCEN form. So if you have foreign assets, you file documents with your tax return or separately with them. This is a real law that you, if you are an owner in an S corporation, partnership, LLC, LLP, if you are a member, you have to deal with this. If you set up an entity in 2024, as I understand it, you have 90 days from the date your entity became final with your state to do this. And if you set it up before then, you've got, I think, a little longer. There was a court case that came out that deemed this to be unconstitutional in the state of Alabama. However, folks, I do not practice law. You need to talk to your corporate attorney. If I were you, I would, after you listen to this podcast, pick up the phone, call your corporate attorney and say, I heard this guy named Art Wiederman talk about the Corporate Transparency Act. What do I have to do? I am not giving you any advice as to what to do or not to do, but you need to do this because the penalties for not complying on this are, as my late mother used to say, ginormous. They're large, thousands and thousands of dollars.
Be sure to check out our new Eide Bailly podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
So with that, let's get into our discussion about estate planning. And folks, I will tell you that 67% number, I think, is probably pretty accurate because every time we have clients come in, we ask them, do you have estate documents? Well, yeah, I know I need to do that. And yeah, I know. And then something happens and you don't have them and it's not good. So again, my guest, Josh Meyer, is the principal of the Meyer Law Firm out of Newport Beach. Josh is a California estate planning, asset protection, probate, and trust administration attorney, also the proud dad of four great kids, and he helps families meet their financial, legal, and moral obligations to the loved ones by creating estate financial life plans that ensure their family's complete protection and well-being. Josh Meyer, welcome to the Art of Dental Finance and Management.
Thanks for having me, Art. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, thanks for coming on. So four kids, and I know that you coach sports. So the nice thing about being in your own practice is you get to set your own hours. And if practice is at 3:30 after school, you get to be there. So what kind of coaching are you doing?
Yeah, no, it's a great joy of mine. So we have the four kids, and so I've kind of coached a bunch of different sports throughout the year. Right now, it's flag football season. So I'm coaching two of them right now in that. So the season is just gearing up and have a great start and just have a lot of fun, with the kids.
Oh, flag football is a blast. I coached baseball, basketball, and soccer. My basketball record was a sterling in 3 years of coaching my son, Forrest, 4 wins, 24 losses with a perfect 0-12 record. But when we had our 0-12 season at the party, my son came up, gave me a big hug, gave me the coach's gift and said, Dad, it doesn't matter that we didn't win a game. We all had a lot of fun, which is all that matters, right?
Oh, yeah. Especially at those ages and stuff. It's just, you know, the pizza party at the end and the, you know, the high fives and the hugs and just messing around after the game is just as much fun as the game sometimes. So it's great.
I mean, they've done surveys. They say that the number one important thing to parents about youth sports is winning, and the number one important thing to the kids is snacks. So that's and that's the way it should be. So, Josh, tell us a little bit about your professional journey.
Sure. So I actually started out in probate and trust litigation. So this is kind of on the back end when somebody passes away. Instead of the family coming together to support each other and to have each other's back, they're at each other's throats. And it was a really just sad, you know, time because these people, they just lost a loved one. And rather than be able to mourn and grieve and to celebrate that person's life, they're now tossed into a court battle. And what I found is it was usually one of three reasons. Either the person had no planning in place at all, so there wasn't any direction and guidance for the family, as to where to go. And so they're left to the state deciding it, and it's not necessarily how they would want it or their loved one would want it. The second reason was it just wasn't set up properly from the start. And so there was gaps in the planning. And so, well, they were well-intended to avoid having to go through court and avoid having a mess. They ended up there. And then the third reason, which is really one of the most common ones that I see, is that people have a plan in place, but it's out of date. And so a lot of times, you know, people will set up their plan and it, like you've already talked about it, it's not something that anybody wants to talk about. So it's hard enough to get in there. But typically, unless you're doing this, you know, the day before you pass away, there's going to be changes in your life, changes in your relationship, changes in law, like you just mentioned, that your plan needs to account for. You know, this is a living, breathing document. And so what would happen is people would set it up, 20 years would pass by, and they're telling everybody what their new wishes are, what their new circumstances are, but they don't legally document it, and it ends up as a mess. And so, you know, it was just a really sad, you know, time. And what I found is that all of those things were avoidable if you not only set up a plan properly from the start, but you have a relationship where you're regularly updating your plan to make sure it always is consistent with your wishes and with the current laws. And so that's when I switched over from the litigation side of things to the planning side of things. So much happier side, right? Nobody's fighting. So yes. It's much better from that standpoint, but really can use that as an opportunity to share with people on, you know, how things went wrong and some of the missteps that I saw that resulted in litigation to help families avoid those issues and to make sure that, you know, their family and their loved ones are able to support each other, you know, in that, you know, really just, you know, sad and difficult time.
I've been an expert witness, Josh, probably a dozen times in dental cases. I've been to court two or three times because fortunately, as you know, as a former litigator, most of those cases don't make it to a courtroom. They either get to a mediator or an arbitrator. And I walked into the litigator's office that I was working with on the side that I was working on one of my cases. And I looked at all these books on his desk and I just looked him in the eye and said, how do you do this? I mean, how do you do? And he just shrugged his shoulders. I'm sure you did the same thing. I mean, that's litigation is brutal. I mean, it is absolutely brutal. So I think you made the right decision by going into estate planning and stuff. So, all right. So let's talk to the 67% of our listeners, the two out of every three of you that do not have documents, or if you do, they're not good documents. And writing your wishes on a napkin does not qualify as estate documents, folks, just so you know. Where do you start? I mean, you know, someone listens to this podcast, Josh, and they go, yeah, I know. And my mom just passed away and her estate was, and that's a lot of times that's what happens is they have a friend or they have a family member, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa passed away. And they see that they didn't have documents. And they see having to go through probate and what that's like. So where do we start?
Yeah, I say that's usually there's some triggering event. Like you said, nobody wants to think about this. We don't want to think about our own mortality. And it's something where, you know, I even have people say, you know, oh, if I do this, then that means I'm going to pass away. And the reality is, no, it's not. This is something where I will say most people, after they're doing this, they get a sense of peace because it's not now it's not something that's hanging over their head. It's not something that they have to worry about where they can now go out and, you know, live in peace knowing that they have this planning in place. And so the best place to start is, you know, to get educated, you know, listening to podcasts like this, just to understand what your options are and what things would look like if you really don't have planning in place, because there's just a lot of misconceptions out there that people believe that maybe they don't need to have an estate plan or they don't qualify or they have, you know, something that's good enough. And they don't really realize, you know, a lot of the traps that are out there and really how bad it can be for their loved ones, which nobody wants that legacy. Nobody wants that legacy to be like, you're the guy who left your kids stuck in probate, they're fighting, it's a mess. Like, that's not the legacy anybody wants to leave behind. And so the first thing to do is to get educated and to understand just what those options are and to understand that it's really not that hard to get things going, to get it in place.
So let's talk about some of the questions. You know, a client calls you up and I mean, I'm assuming, you know, we talk about, you know, where do you want your assets to go? Who's going to be your executor? Let's get into some of those. What are some of the issues that you're going to deal with a family? Maybe it's a husband and wife, maybe it's a single individual, who knows? What are the questions that you're going to address? And let's get into talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, usually, you know, we want to talk about, you know, just what their wishes are. And there's usually a few different stages that we're looking at. You know, we're like, one, the first and primary thing that most people are concerned about is for themselves. You know, if something happens to them, if they're incapacitated, if they're not able to get care for themselves, to make sure that they have the right people who are making decisions for them and they understand what those decisions are. And so that's typically going to be your medical agents. So if there's a medical decision that needs to be made and you're not able to make it, and whether that's the type of procedure, the type of medication, or even bigger decisions like end of life decisions, it's really important to make sure that that is documented and you have the right person there. Because if you don't do it, the end result in all of these scenarios where there's not planning in place is two things happen. One, we have uncertainty. And two, you open up the door for there to be fighting and going to court, which nobody wants. And so really, you know, sitting down and thinking about, okay, well, who are the people that I'd want to make the decisions during my lifetime if I'm not able to, is kind of the first place that we want to start.
Now, we have different things we have to make decisions about, right? We have to make decisions about financial issues, you know, selling the house, selling the business. We have health, you know, living well. So what are the, let's get specific. What are some of the decisions and some of the people that we have to have in place who are going to make those decisions once we pass away?
Yeah. So kind of where we are starting point is we kind of have a wheel in a picture where we call it what's called the default chart. And so what this is, if you don't have any planning in place, this is what you default to in the state of California. And so there's kind of, you know, a few really six key areas that most people are going to look at and want to consider. The first area is, if you have minor children, is who would take care of them. And so that's going to be your guardian. And so, you know, hopefully for most of us, you know, our kids, they're going to, you know, we'll be around for them, you know, well into their, you know, formative years. But if something were to happen while they were minors, we want to make sure that as parents, you know, we pick the people who would be best situated to, you know, continue the care for our kids the way that we would want to. And so that's done by naming permanent guardians. And the legal document is typically in a will. That's where we take care of the kids. The next thing that we're going to look at are our assets, to make sure that our assets are available for us while we're alive, if we're incapacitated, and then to make sure that they go to the loved ones who we want when we pass away, without having to go through a long and expensive probate court process. And it's one of those things where a lot of times people think like, oh, probate's not that bad, but they don't realize that, you know, right now in many counties in California, it's a minimum of 2 years. Some of them, it's an almost 3-year long process. It's all open and public, so everybody can see what you have and where it's going, which opens up, you know, your family to, you know, being taken advantage by predators. And it's very expensive. It's something where, you know, for most, you know, people in California, it averages out to about 5% of the total, you know, gross value of your estate. It starts out at 8% and goes down from there. And so it can just be a very, very expensive and time consuming process that we want to avoid. And so that's where, by having proper planning in place, we can avoid that long and expensive probate court process and make sure that the assets go to who you want on the terms that you want. Because a lot of times, you know, when we go through probate, you're left with who the state wants your assets to go to. And that may or may not be who you want it to go to. It certainly, a lot of times, will not include stepchildren who may be, you know, very, you know, you raise them, you love them, and you treat them personally as any other child in your family, but they may not be included under your state's default plan. It's not going to include your other extended family members or your favorite charities or organizations. And so you lose a lot of that control by not taking, control of that planning yourself.
So I may have told this story. It hasn't been a while, but my late mother, God bless her, she died 12 years ago, and I bugged her for years. Mom, get an estate plan, get a will, get something, write something on that. And her, you know, her typical is, I'm too mean to die and I'm leaving you all of my debts. That's what my mother used to say. So my mother got very sick very quickly. She was 82, and I saw where this was going. And I had a notary already with documents ready to sign on a Friday at 3:00 in the afternoon. Thursday morning at 6:30 a.m., the caretaker called me and said, your mom died in her sleep. So we had to go through probate. Fortunately, it was pretty much just a property, because the rest of her stuff was in an IRA, which is another conversation we'll have today. Folks, I will tell you, and again, God knows I tried. Everybody knows I tried. Ma, I tried. I really did. It was 16 months till we were able to get rid of that property. It cost us over $15,000 for a property that was not very expensive. So Josh speaks the truth, folks. And I went through it, and I went through it with a very competent probate lawyer, but it is a pain in the butt. Okay, so we got to make sure that it's important that you have a will. So talk about, what's a revocable living trust and why is it something that we should consider?
Yeah, so a revocable trust is a legal contract that you set up, and if you're married, you typically would set it up with your spouse, that says, this is who I am, these are my assets. If something happens to me, this is who I want to be in control. That's your trustee. That's the person who's in charge with overseeing everything. And this is who I want to get everything. These are your beneficiaries. So a lot of times it would be your spouse, your kids, your other loved ones, the charities, anybody that you want to support. And then you also get to say that the terms that it goes to them on. You know, for some of our family members or friends or organizations that we're giving assets to, we can just give it to them outright and say, you know, enjoy and do your best with it. For other people, it would make sense where the money goes to them in trust, where there's some oversight, there's some protections, there's some controls to make sure that the money is used to uplift their life and not used to kind of derail them if they get assets on the wrong terms.
And you have an executor. Let's talk about who and what is an executor. What do they do? I am executor for two or three folks, but I've never had to engage. What does an executor do? What are their duties? What can they do? What can't they do?
Yeah. And there's really typically three legal and financial roles that are part of your plan. And they kind of, they have similar purpose, but they wear a different hat depending on the scenario. And a lot of times the terms get used interchangeably. And so it may be helpful just to kind of talk about what those different ones are and then
sure.
How they all come
absolutely
into play. And so usually there's going to be, you know, a couple different scenarios that we're looking at. One is if you're incapacitated, the person who's going to manage and control your legal and financial affairs, if you're alive but not able to do so, that's typically your durable power of attorney. And so their job is to make sure that all of your assets are invested properly, maintained properly, and that you have the proper care for your lifetime to make sure that you have all of the support that you need. Then the other person that can be involved both upon your incapacity and death is your trustee. So the trustee is the person that manages any assets that are titled in the name of your trust. And so for some of your assets, when you have a revocable living trust, which says where you want your assets to go, some of the assets will be directly owned by that trust. So that things like your property, your bank accounts, your businesses, those are owned directly by the trust. And so the person in charge of those assets is your trustee. Now, there's going to be other assets that are just left in your own individual name. Oftentimes, that's going to be things like retirement accounts, life insurance, other, you know, personal obligations. Those assets would be handled by your durable power of attorney. And so while you're alive but incapacitated, depending on how your asset is titled, the power of attorney will manage some assets and the trustee will manage other assets. Because of that, we typically recommend that you have the same person be the trustee and the power of attorney at both times. So they're wearing the same hat. So under any scenario, they can manage any of your assets for your benefit. And then we also avoid the issue of two people having competing and overlapping powers who may disagree. And so we want to have those rules together.
Yeah. Now, let's talk for a minute about retirement plan assets. Now, retirement plan assets are kind of a different animal because they're controlled by a beneficiary designation, right, Josh?
Yeah. So while you're alive, that would be an asset that would typically be left in your name. And so if you're not able to manage it, that would be your power of attorney who would use it for your benefit and would be responsible for taking out the required minimum distribution, making sure it's invested properly and used for your care. And then, yes, upon your passing, typically that would be transferred by naming beneficiaries. And so a lot of times, if you're married, you're going to leave it to your spouse first. And then after a spouse, you have some flexibility. You can, you know, leave it directly to your kids. You can leave it to your favorite charity or cause, and you can either do that outright or you can leave it to them in trust if you want to have some protection and control over those assets.
So there's different options of how to do that and how to leave. And that's the beauty of these documents is it's a roadmap for people. Because remember, you're not going to be there. Talk about who should be an executor or a trustee. I mean, you might not want grandpa, who's 97 years old, to be your executor or trustee. You may not want a kid who doesn't get it to be your trustee. How do you help people decide?
Yeah, you know, there's a number of different factors. I usually start with, you know, there's a reason that the word trust is in the word trustee. It needs to be somebody you trust and that you trust explicitly because they have a lot of power and a lot of control. And so if you have the wrong person in place, that's where things can go sideways. And so first and foremost, you want to have somebody that you implicitly trust that's going to honor your wishes, is it's going to make sure you're taken care of and that your wishes are honored upon your passing. And so that there's a number of people, I'm sure, in your life that if you're thinking about this, that may qualify for that. Certainly a spouse, certainly some of your kids, you know, siblings, loved ones, family, friends. There's a lot of people who could qualify for that. But that's kind of the first criteria. Then from there, you want somebody who's going to be responsible because this is a large role. I mean, they're responsible for your entire life and potentially the life of some of your loved ones when you pass away. And so you want to make sure that they're going to be responsible as far as making good investment decisions. Now, this doesn't mean they need to be a financial advisor or investment guru, but they need to be savvy enough to make sure that they know what they're good at and capable of and who they need to bring in professionals for. So they need to bring in people like you are, you know, if they're not, you know, a tax professional themselves. They need to bring in a financial advisor if they're not, you know, in that world. They need to bring in attorneys if they're not in that world to make sure that they bring the, you know, the proper team in place. And so a lot of times, you know, I would say many people, they pick family members or friends because that's who they know, like, and trust, and that they have that sense of being able to tell them what their exact wishes are. And so that can be great. The other option is that there are a number of different professional or corporate trustees who can step in that role, who they can kind of take that heavy lifting and responsibility. And that can take some of the emotional side out of things as well.
And they have experience in doing that. Folks, let me just say this. It's not fun. Nobody likes doing this. I've gone through the process. It is a lot of work. It's a lot of things that you have to consider. But at the end of the day, one of Art Wiederman's golden rules that I have my video on, that I teach to dentists all over the country, is prepare estate documents to take care of the ones that you love. And that's what this will do. I'm right now working with a client who, a dentist who died, God bless her, in the middle of the treatment room, in front of all her patients and all her clients. I'm sorry, and all her team members. And we've had to pick this up and turn it around and get the business sold. It's not been easy. So you want to have this in place. And, you know, I mean, Josh is as knowledgeable of an estate attorney as I've met in the last 10 years. I mean, a couple things we're going to talk about after I let him give out his contact information is this guy knows what he's talking about, folks. So, Josh, what I'd like to do is tell us a little bit about your law firm and give out your contact information. Folks, if, you know, again, just make the phone call and get the process started. And that's when you hire a CPA and you hire an attorney and you hire an estate attorney. They do the heavy lifting for you. So, Josh, what's the best way for folks to get a hold of you? And tell us a little bit about your firm.
Sure. Yeah. So my wife and I, we started the firm about 15 years ago. So it's her and I, and then we have a few, we have additional attorneys on our team and a full staff. So that we have a team about 18 to 20 there to, you know, help kind of families at every different stage of life, kind of in a few different, all relating to wills and trusts and estate planning. But we have different, you know, services, you know, regardless, you know, anywhere that you're in at your stage of life. The best way to contact us is either through our website at www.meierfirm.com. That's MEIERFIRM.com. Or you can call the office at 949-718-0420. And either of those ways, you know, our team is there and happy to, you know, hear what your needs are and then be able to, you know, place you with the appropriate person in our firm to just better understand what your situation is, what your wish is, and to see if there's an opportunity for us to help. And this is something, you know, anybody who's listening to this podcast, we'd be happy to, you know, if you mention it, we'd be happy to waive kind of our initial planning session fee so we can get an opportunity to learn about you, learn about us, and to see if we're a good fit to work together.
That's great information, Josh. And folks, remember, most of my dental clients have three main assets. They have their home. They have their retirement plan. And maybe they have a dental building. And they might have other investments too. And these are the things that, Josh is very, very knowledgeable about, which I want to jump back into here. So Congress passed something called the Secure Act. I love the names they come up with for these acts. So this is called the Secure Act. And this Secure Act, it used to be, folks, that when you got, when someone died and they had money in an IRA or a 401k defined benefit plan, that you would be able to use their life expectancy to get that money out. So usually with a spouse, like my wife's name is Lynn. If God forbid something happened to me, she will have my remaining life expectancy to take out the money in our retirement plan. Well, they changed those rules. And what they did is if you are a non-spousal beneficiary, you're a single individual, maybe you've decided to leave your retirement assets to your kids, grandkids, whomever. Now, Josh, those rules have changed and you have to take that money out, as I understand it, in most cases over 10 years. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, 10 years. And in some cases, if not done properly, even within 5 years. And so it's really changed the rules on the ability to kind of what we call stretch out the benefit. Because the big thing with retirement accounts is while that money is in the retirement account, there's no taxes that are being paid. But as soon as those funds come out, we're paying income taxes. So we're paying both federal and state income taxes. So if you're in a high state like in California, those can be, you know, you can cut that retirement in half pretty quickly just by taxes, you know, being taken out. And so it used to be where if you could take it out over your lifetime, you're only having to take out a little bit of the amount, and it won't necessarily change your income tax bracket that much. Whereas now, if you're having to take it out over 5 or 10 years, you're having to take out much larger chunks. And what we're seeing, especially for families who are leaving behind large retirement accounts, those funds are now being taxed at a much higher income tax rate because it's coming out in larger chunks.
Yeah. And I mean, you think about it, you've got, if you have, you know, people pass away, I mean, what's the average life expectancy these days? 75 to 85, give or take, maybe a little higher. So you could have children that are in their 40s and 50s, which are the prime earning years. And if you got somebody that's earning, you know, $200,000, $300,000, $500,000, maybe your son or daughter is a dentist and they're earning that kind of money, and they, and you have millions of dollars and you've done a good job of planning and you've got millions of dollars in a retirement fund, you're going to add over 10 years that money. And now, Josh, you can take that money out on the, in many cases on the last day of the 10th year, right? If you wanted to.
Yeah. So they're going back and forth on how this rule is going.
Yeah,
and now they have the Secure Act 2.0. And so depending on the scenario who you talk to, some are saying that you take it, you can wait the whole 10 years. Others saying that you need to take it out over time. And so I think we're still waiting on some clarity there. There is some strategy there though, too. If you were to wait the whole 10 years and you take $1 million out, you're 100% going to be in the highest tax bracket. And so there's some strategy that $1 million, if you were going to take it out $100,000 at a time, it may bump you up one tax bracket, but maybe you don't hit the highest rate. And so there can be some strategy even within that 10-year confine.
And we can also talk about Roth IRA conversions too. We'll talk about that. We can also talk about one of the things you pointed out to me and one of our clients that we worked with is the possibility of a charitable trust for the IRA money to go. Talk about that. I learn stuff every single day from smart people like you. So how would that work? Let's say you got somebody's got realistically, you know, $5, $6, $7, $8, $10 million in a retirement plan, and they got a couple of kids. And if those kids take the money out, it's $300,000, $400,000, $500,000 a year for 10 years. How do we, what can we do to mitigate some of that?
Yeah. So, you know, for anybody who's charitably inclined, and I usually say, really everybody is, it's just, do you want to be a voluntary philanthropist or an involuntary one? You know, you can either choose the favorite charities that your money goes to, or you can let the government do it. There's a great opportunity with some charitable trust where, as opposed to naming your kids directly, who, like Art was saying, have to take this out over 10 years. And now you basically, you know, cut that, you know, $4 million retirement account in half, and the kids are really only going to net around $2 million after taxes. There's some opportunity where instead you can have the retirement account first go into a charitable trust. Now, this charitable trust, because it's charitable in nature, isn't going to pay any direct taxes right off the bat. And what you can do, though, is that money then can now grow in that charitable trust tax deferred. And then you can have it where your kids or your loved ones are the beneficiaries, and the money can go out to them over their lifetime. And so rather than having to pay, take out these big lump sums over 10 years, you can now instead have that money, you know, be sprinkled out throughout their lifetime, so you can minimize the amount of tax hit that goes to the kid.
Yeah, and that's an interest that brings up an interesting point about, you know, the kids are going to say, okay, mom and dad died, here comes my $5 million. Nope. So what do you like to do as far as telling children, in many cases adult children, what mom and dad have? What do you advise clients? Because that's a tough one.
It is. And I would say, you know, every case is, you know, very unique and personal, right? I'd say I have some clients who are very close to the chest and don't want to let anybody know about anything. And they'll say they'll find out about it when I die. And that's how it is. And then I have other people who are very open and they want to have a very, you know, open conversation, especially when we're talking about, you know, either business succession or wealth succession. They want, you know, their family in the fold right away. So there is no misunderstanding as far as what their wishes and their intent. And so, you know, it's a very personal decision. I certainly, though, recommend if people are comfortable to, you know, at a minimum, just let the family know that they've done this, who their, you know, the people that they should contact, who their attorney is, who their CPA is, who their financial advisors are, just the different professionals that they can talk to help guide them through the process, and then just where all of the legal documents are located. So, and where all of their financials are located, just some of that practical stuff. And you can do that without getting in the details as far as who's getting what, who's in control, and what dollar amounts are. But that will at least make, you know, avoid a lot of the uncertainty and a lot of the guesswork. Because right now, what we found is there's people who have even planning in place, and the family still doesn't even know where things are at. And this can be even, you know, the surviving spouse. You know, a lot of times it's one of the spouses takes the lead on everything, and the other one just doesn't even know where a lot of the finances are at. So it's really important just to make sure everybody at a minimum knows where everything is at. So you don't, some of your assets don't end up in the unclaimed assets, which in California right now, I think is at like $7 billion. So forget about Powerball, just go start, you know, making some unclaimed assets. That's where all the real money's at.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just so important to, you know, I did what I've done for my wife, Lynn. We will be married a year from May. We'll also be about 40 years. We'll be married. There's a letter. It's in my safe. Lynn knows the combination of the safe. And it basically says, sweetheart, if you have to open this letter, something bad has happened to me. So these are the people you call. And again, sometimes talk, Josh, about kind of the division of duties. You've worked with probably thousands of couples over your lifetime in helping them with estate planning in 15 years. Sometimes one spouse handles everything. Sometimes another spouse handles it. Sometimes they do it together. But don't you see a lot of situations where one spouse handles all the finances, and if they die, the other spouse has absolutely no clue what they have, where it is, how to get at it, what are the passwords to get into the Schwab account, et cetera, right?
Yeah, that happens all the time when they're not, you know, having this, you know, when they haven't done the planning in advance, or even if they've done it, if they just haven't taken some of those extra practical steps. And so just like you've done where you have a letter, you know, letting your wife know, and certainly your kids would be able to find this, you know, who are all the right people and where is everything located, you know, that becomes really important. And so, you know, there's certainly all of the legal documents, you know, we have your wills, your trusts, your powers of attorney, your medical directives, those are all important. But then there's a lot of the practical stuff where, you know, we recommend people have an inventory of just what all the different accounts are and where they're located, where you have a list of all of your password and online accounts, just some of that practical stuff that can just make things a lot easier and a lot more accessible for your spouse and your kids if you're not there to be able to guide them through that process.
And a lot of sophisticated financial advisors, and you know, I mean, there's lots of great ones out there. They have what's called vaults, where basically the financial advisor will allow you to keep everything in one place. So the financial advisor knows who Josh Meyer is, and the financial advisor knows who Art Wiederman is, the CPA. So when someone passes away and they have significant assets, they can kind of helpfully be the quarterback. So if you're not going to be the person, you need to have somebody who kind of knows what to do here. So Josh, Let's talk about businesses. Okay. Most of our listeners own their own dental practice. Now in California, they have a special rule that says if someone dies, because you're not, unless you set up a DSO, which is a whole nother conversation, which we're not getting into today, I promise. A surviving spouse has generally 1 year to transfer the ownership of a dental practice to another dentist. And that's what happens. And again, we're not going to get into that, but let's talk about just the general ownership of a business. If they own stock in a corporation or they own a partnership, how does that, what should we be doing to take care of that?
Yeah, we really want to make sure that all of our assets are connected to our trust in some way. Either the trust is the owner or the trust is the beneficiary. Because otherwise, if it's not, then those assets are subject to probate. And one of the biggest assets that is overlooked are business interests. You know, you own your business, you set it up, you have an LLC, you have a corporation, whatever the entity structure is. And a lot of times what we find is, you know, especially for professionals, unless they're, their spouse is a professional, they're the only one that's on the membership interest or own the corporate shares. And the problem is when they pass away, that asset doesn't automatically go to the surviving spouse or to the kids. That asset is now subject to probate if it's left in their individual name. And so what we want to do is we want to assign that ownership to the trust. Because in that case, then the ownership of the asset will go to the trust. And even if the spouse is not, doctor, lawyer, CPA, whatever the professional status is, like Art, you said, there's going to be an opportunity where they can sell it or transition the practice and then get the proceeds from the sale of the practice without having to go through probate court. But that can only happen if the ownership is actually owned by the trust. And then what's important with that is it's perfectly acceptable for the trust to own the corporate interest. But if it is a professional corporation or if it's a corporation that has made an S election, which often for dental practices, medical practices, accounting practices, legal practices, it's both. It's an S election with a professional status. You need to have special language in your trust that addresses both of those so we don't run into any rules that mess up either of those elections.
And one thing, folks, I want to point out, which I learned with this client I was talking about and another client we dealt with a couple of years ago who passed away. It is very important, and we'll talk about this here in a second, that you generally get a step-up in basis on the assets when you die to the fair market value. And that's the way people can pass real estate on pretty much tax-free. And again, we'll get into that for a second. But you have to be very careful. If you are the owner of an S corporation, and most of you own S corporations, especially here in California, you get a step up in basis on the stock, but you don't get a step up in basis on the assets inside the S corp. Now, we're not going to get deep into this. All I can tell you is that there needs to be very sophisticated planning and people to help you to make sure that when you ultimately sell your dental practice of the person that passed away, that we don't end up with double tax and not getting this step up. And that's all I'm going to say about that, Josh, because we could spend an hour and we could really geek out on this if we wanted to, but I don't want to today. But that's something you run into sometimes, right?
Oh, 100%. Well, and kind of the biggest issue that we're running into right now is that the biggest issue is when you hold real estate in a corporation. That's where LLCs come in. You want to make sure, people are doing it for asset protection, control, all of those great things, but you want to make sure you're using the right entity and you're making the right election. And so that's where, talking to somebody like you are becomes critical, because if you choose the wrong entity or make the wrong election, you could be hit with a very unexpected tax.
Yeah. And generally what we're finding is you generally want to make sure that your corporation is liquidated and dissolved in the same year that you sell the business. And that's, again, we're not going to get deep into those weeds. I want to get into a different subject here, which is the estate tax. Now, folks, they get you when you're alive. They get you if you own property. They get you when you go buy a candy bar. They get you every which way you can. In some states, they get you driving through on a state highway in the states that don't have state income tax. All right. Well, they get you when you die. And there are, for most mortals out there at the moment, the government has given us a very large exemption of about was it about $13 million per person, give or take?
Yeah, 13.61 right now for 2024.
So, you're protected on $27 million of assets. So if you're not worth $27 million, you're probably not going to pay an estate tax. But that could change, right, Josh? I mean, we could be going back down to $3 million a person, $5 million a person. I mean, isn't that a real possibility in the next couple of years?
Yeah. So right now, how it works is that the old law was that it was $5 million per person. So if you're an individual, you can transfer $5 million to your kids or other individuals. If you're a married couple, you could transfer $10 million. Then back a few years ago, they doubled it. So it was then $10 million per person, and then it's adjusted for inflation. So that's why we have the $13.6 million per person, you know, 27 and change for a couple. That was only a 7-year law, though. So that's going to sunset currently at the end of 2025. So come, you know, January 1, 2026, unless Congress acts and does something affirmatively to extend this doubling of the exemption, it will revert to the old law, which was $5 million, adjusted for inflation. You know, we don't know the exact number, but probably somewhere around $6.5 million. So rather than having, high 13, 14 millions individually, now we're back down to, six and a half million for an individual, 12, 13 million for a couple. And so this now starts bringing in a lot more people into the conversation of having a taxable estate.
Especially if you have separate property. So how do we, and again, obviously a 25 million or even a 13 million, I mean, I've been doing this for 40 years and I don't have a ton of clients who have net worths of over $13 million. We have some. Some people have done a really good job. Maybe they own multiple practices. That's another thing, guys. If you own multiple practices, those practices all have a value and they're all going to have to be appraised when you pass away. So there's important planning to be done with that. So I know there's this thing called an AB trust, where I know they, when they taught it to us in school, it was A is above ground and B is below ground, right? So how do we use an AB trust? Because I know that if you don't do the planning right, Josh, you can lose one of the exemptions if you don't do it right. And if you do the planning right, we can make maximum exempt, benefit of both. So how does that all work?
Yeah, so there's different options on how you transfer the assets to the survivor with a revocable trust. And so the first option would be you just have everything stays in one bucket. And so while they're alive, it's in a joint single bucket. And then when the first spouse passes, it stays in a single open bucket where the survivor has complete control and use. And that's great from a flexibility standpoint. What we haven't done, though, is done any real like estate tax planning by doing that. And so rather than all of the assets staying in a single bucket for the survivor, we can divide the estate into two buckets. And so half of the assets will go into the survivor's share, and the other half of the assets will go into the deceased spouse's share. So that's the A and the B trust. And we're in a community property state, so that would be for the 50-50 would be with respect to any community assets. And then you had mentioned separate property. To the extent there's any separate property, that spouse's separate property share would go into their bucket, whether they're the survivor or the deceased spouse. And so the benefit of doing that is the deceased spouse's share goes into an irrevocable trust. And so we lock in whatever amount goes in there for estate tax purposes. So no matter how large the deceased spouse's share grows, and no matter what the law is at the time of the second spouse passing, the deceased spouse's share will pass estate tax free. Now, even in that scenario, though, a lot of people don't have $13 million to put into both buckets. And so there's a cool thing that Congress did introduce several years back, which is called portability.
Portability.
And so it used to be the only way to preserve the surviving spouse's exemption was to do this AB trust. Now we can actually have you can do the AB trust, or you can have everything go into a single bucket, and then you can file an election on an estate tax return where you can use portability, which can preserve the deceased spouse's exemption. And so what that means is when the surviving spouse passes away, they not only have their amount of exemption, but they also have the deceased spouse's amount of exemption as well. So there's two different options that we can use, either the AB trust or portability or both, depending on the circumstance.
It's really going to depend on what kind of assets you have, what your net worth is. And, you know, for those of you who, you know, have a family business or have multiple dental practices, you know, family business is not in dentistry. Maybe a spouse has one of those. I mean, those numbers can get up there really, really high. And the government, you know, you're going to have your business appraised at the end of the day. So, you know, these numbers can get up there. Let's talk about using life insurance in estate plan. How does life insurance work? I know that there's a thing called an ILIT and an irrevocable life insurance trust, because if you end up owing estate taxes, you know, and you have a most people in this country have built wealth either in the stock market or in real estate. I mean, or in a business. Those are the three ways you build wealth for the most part. But if you have an estate tax, and you have a business and that's your asset and it's worth $50 million, you're not going to sell the business to pay your estate taxes. So talk about how do we use life insurance in an estate plan?
Yeah, life insurance is a great tool to provide liquidity. And so it's something where, yeah, if you have real estate, you have a business, you have investments that you want to be able to pass down to the family and you want them to be able to keep it without having to sell it or liquidate it, you know, typically at a fire sale too, or a discount because you're having to do it in a hurry. Life insurance is a great tool to be able to have liquid assets available to pay any taxes, to be pay any buyouts that you need to do. Whatever the, you know, expenses are, life insurance is a great tool to provide some, you know, liquid cash to provide, you know, different options to pay for whatever is out there. And then the thing is, though, like you mentioned, you know, life insurance, that's also includable in your estate. So that counts towards whatever your exemption is, unless you have that insurance set aside in a special type of trust, which you mentioned. The most common type would be an ILIT, so an irrevocable life insurance trust. So this is a special type of trust that's built to hold life insurance, where when you pass away, those liquid assets are available for your family to use to pay taxes, to have liquidity, to do whatever. But as long as they're passed properly, they don't count towards that estate tax exemption. So those assets, if used in an ILIT properly, can pass estate tax free. So you can have a $10 million life insurance policy that does not get subject to estate taxes with the ILIT. So it's a great tool for liquidity and also just to pass wealth tax free.
But if you just own the policy in your name and you don't have an ILIT, that $10 million is going into your estate and is going to exacerbate the problem that you did all this planning to avoid, right?
Yeah, yeah, it makes the problem worse, not better. Exactly. So you have liquid cash, but now you just have, you know, 40% of that liquid cash is now going away for taxes unnecessarily.
That's right. And then you can also set up, let's talk about a couple of other types of trusts that you can set up. And then I've got one more question. And I love doing these podcasts, but the time goes by so fast. So You can set up different types of trusts. I mean, you can set up a trust to pretty much do anything in this life. You can set up a trust, I mean, to take care of an elderly family member. You can take care of a special needs trust. What types of trusts, you know, briefly, do you help clients with that they may not know about?
Yeah, so I mean, there are a number of different types. You know, usually the first foundational trust is the revocable trust. That's to make sure the assets go to who you want and the terms you want without going to court. Then there are other types of trusts that are more specialty based on kind of what your goals are. Usually that's going to be based on, you hit on them, you know, if you have a child that has a developmental delay or disability, if we were to give them money either outright or even in a normal type of continuing trust, that could disqualify them from the government benefits. And it may go to somebody who it's just not appropriate for them to oversee it. And so that's where the special needs trust comes into play, which is a great tool and vehicle to be able to continue to provide for your child or loved one that has a developmental delay or disability. And so that money is earmarked for them, can be used for their lifestyle to make sure that they have the quality of life that you want, but it can be done in a way to not disrupt their government benefits. And so it's a way to kind of provide the best opportunities and options available for your loved one. The other types that we're typically setting up usually revolve around either trying to avoid some form of tax, either estate, income, gift, capital gains, or estate taxes, or for asset protection, or both. And so there's over 200 different techniques that we use to avoid those different taxes and to provide protection. Some of them are specific to the type of asset, such as the insurance trust that you mentioned. Other ones are more geared towards philanthropic needs, the charitable trust that we talked about earlier. And then other ones are really more meant to be a tax play. And so that would be, intentionally defective grantor trust, an IDGET. There's all these acronyms that are out there that I think, you know, there's CRT, there's ILT, there's, IDGET, there's CRUTS, there's CRATS, there's NINGS, WINGS, DINGS, you know, any of those different trusts that are out there. There's all these fun acronyms that people love to do and love to use for marketing terms. The goal, the key is in all of this stuff, rather than, you know, getting into every single type of trust, the key when you're sitting down with your professional, with you're sitting down with your estate attorney, is rather than try to first start out with the different strategy, what I recommend is first start out with what your goal is. You know, what do you want things to how do you want them to play out? If you could wave a magic wand, how would you want things to play out? And typically, certainly people don't want to pay taxes. They want things to be smooth and easy, but usually there's some other goals that are going to be first. You know, during their lifetime, they want to make sure they live the quality of life. So you work so hard building your dental practice. Well, you want to enjoy the fruits of that labor as well, before you just give it away to your kids or to other people. And so you want to make sure that the professionals you're working with understand your goals. And then based on those goals, we back in the techniques that can help do those. And because what type of trust or insurances or investment strategies you should be using should really be based on the goals, not just the strategy on itself.
Well, I do hope that this conversation today, I got one more question for you before I let you go. I do hope this conversation, folks, is, as is every single podcast I do, I'm a broken record. You guys know that if you've listened to me for 5 years, is a call to action. Okay. This is, you know, you're not going to do your estate plan based on taking copious notes of what Josh has just said in the last hour. You know, you're going to want to give him a call, give him a chance to give out his number one more time. But this is a call to action. It is not fun. It is not the most, you know, it's not as much fun going out on the golf course. In fact, in my estate plan, I will be buried under the 16th green at Augusta National in Georgia, where they play the Masters. That is mandatory. They don't know that yet, but I will have my attorneys go ahead and make sure that that happens when that day comes. But and if not there, Pinehurst or Pebble Beach or somewhere like that. But promise me that if you don't have these documents or you haven't looked at them in 10 years or 30 years or 50 years, that you give someone like Josh a call. Last question, and then I'll let you, we'll give out your information one more time. Josh, what are some of the biggest mistakes you've seen people make? Obviously, the number one mistake is doing nothing. That's the biggest mistake. We've talked about that. But in documents that you've seen, what are some of the mistakes that you see that people just like, oh my God, we've got to fix this?
Yeah, you have two of the biggest mistakes. The first one really goes to the AB trust. So this is something where historically, before portability, everybody did an AB trust. And it made total sense because we wanted to make sure the maximum amount of assets would pass to our kids tax-free. Now in this high estate tax environment, the AB trust can actually be really bad because the downside is that the B trust typically will not get a step up in basis that you had mentioned. And so while you're avoiding estate taxes that you don't need to avoid, you're now missing out on an opportunity to avoid capital gains taxes. And so a lot of people, they have an AB trust where at the time it made total sense. Now if they have it and they continue to keep it that way, they're subjecting their family to a huge capital gains tax that was completely unnecessary. So they're protecting against the wrong tax. And so that's where it's really important to revisit your trust regularly, because if there's been a change in the law, you can inadvertently, you know, subject your family to huge taxes that, you know, easily can be avoided by just changing the structure of your trust. So that's the first one. And then the second one really is related to this is making sure all of your assets are properly titled and connected to your trust. What we see all the time is people set up their bucket, they set up their trust, but they don't put everything into it, or stuff gets inadvertently taken out. You know, people refi their home, the lender takes the property out of the trust to do the refinance, and then they forget to put it back in. Or you open up a new account, you change from one institution to another, and for whatever reason, they just name, you know, you individually, or it's a retirement account that you roll over from your work and you put it into an IRA, and you just name, you know, beneficiaries directly and not the trust, and you can be missing out on some both income tax and protection opportunity.
And that's one of the things I know that good, competent estate attorneys like yourself and your team do is as part of the whole process, you're looking at every single asset to make sure they're titled properly, they're in the right place, you've gone to the county recorder, you've recorded it in the name of the Wiederman Family Trust, dated whatever date it is. And that's, and like you say, you know, it may have been done right when you did this 10 years ago, but if you have changed things, you don't think about, oh my God, I've got a title, this is the name of the trust, it's in my name. Uh-oh. And then it goes through probate, you know, so that's a problem. You're a very smart man, Josh. And my rule is I have smart people come onto my podcast who are much smarter than I. And folks, you have a question, I'm sure Josh would be happy to engage with an answer for you. So Josh, one more time, would you please give out your contact information?
Yeah, you can reach us at 949-718-0420, or you can look us on the web at meierfirm.com, MEIERFIRM.com. And we have, you know, some online booking options and a lot of great resources and tools for you to become educated, and would love to meet with you if you have some additional questions and you want to find out what options your family has.
All right, Josh, thank you. Hang with me as I take the podcast out, please. Folks, thank you again for the honor and privilege of your time. One thing I forgot to mention at the top of this is we are going to be at the California Dental Association Convention. I'm going to have a booth. I believe my booth number is 1350. I'm going to be speaking. If you are a dentist who is looking at selling your practice down the road, I'm going to be doing on Thursday morning, May 16th, from 9 to 12. I'm going to be part of a roundtable discussion with bankers and attorneys talking about, you know, what are all the issues of selling your practice. That's, again, from 9 to 12 at the CDA convention. We'll be at booth 1350. I'm also doing some other speaking while I'm there. So come by, say hello. I mean, if you're a listener and we've never met before, I'd love to talk to you. We're down to one dental convention in California now. They're not doing Northern California anymore. If you are looking for a dental CPA, please give me a call, 657-279-3243, or email me at awiederman, that's W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N, at idbailey, idbailly.com. Please visit the website of our wonderful partner, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com. They have over 140 continuing education courses that you can have access to on every topic in clinical dentistry at a very reasonable price, plus three live videos of yours truly, Art Wiederman, at a very reasonable price on some very pertinent financial topics. Could save you lots and lots of money in a consult if you just listen to some of the stuff that you that I did on these. It was really fun to make those, and so, you know, I'd love to see you take a listen to them, www.decisionsindentistry.com. And with that, Josh, thanks a lot for coming on to the podcast today. And we will call it a day. And thank you again. Please tell your friends. Please subscribe to the podcast. If you subscribe on your normal podcast platforms on your mobile phone, you'll get the new podcast that drops twice a month. Every time we record it. And with that, my name is Art Wiederman. And for the Art of Dental Finance and Management with Art Wiederman CPA, we'll call it a podcast and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Ide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.